It's time for a weekly look at some of the top stories in national politics. House Democrats are moving closer to issuing a subpoena for the full Mueller report. Meanwhile, the White House is dealing with fallout from allegations that it didn't listen to concerns about its approval of security clearances. And former Vice President Joe Biden is facing questions about inappropriate contact with women as he considers entering the race for president. We want to hear your thoughts on the accusations against Biden at 800-642-1234. Do you think his making women uncomfortable with unwanted kisses or contact is disqualifying? Would you still vote for Biden knowing about this? How do you think it compares to allegations like those against President Trump? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Lauren Gambino is a political correspondent for The Guardian. Lauren, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, let's start with the latest on the Mueller report. Lauren, what have Democrats been doing to try to get the full report?
Yeah, we had some action today on Capitol Hill. The House Judiciary Committee, the Democrats there, moved ahead to approve a subpoena to get the full unredacted report from Attorney General Barr. They are demanding the full report. Barr has said he's working through this, you know, nearly 400-page report to redact certain pieces of information that he doesn't believe should be made public. But Congress, at least the Democrats, are arguing that they should be able to see it all and obviously go through it in terms of what should be released to the public later. So there's this confrontation, I guess you could say, between the democratically controlled House of Representatives and the Justice Department at the moment. And today's action certainly escalated that. And I guess we'll have to see. Currently, Democrats have not acted on the subpoena. They said they're willing to hold off and discuss with Attorney General Barr. But they said, you know, I think the quote was, in short order, we want to see that report, the full report, or we will issue the subpoena that we approved today.
Yeah, House Judiciary Chairman Jerry Nadler has been going back and forth with Attorney General Barr over the report. Here's what Nadler had to say today about whether he'll ultimately use this subpoena now.
I will give him time to change his mind. But if we cannot reach an accommodation, then we will have no choice but to issue subpoenas for these materials.
If that happens, that raises some questions about how the Justice Department would respond. Do we have any hints from them, Lauren, at this point?
It is unclear. You know, there's a debate over what Congress should have access to. You know, there's testimony from the grand jury that, you know, there are legal questions over whether Congress should be able to access that and read that because it's obviously meant to be confidential. So this would probably move to the courts. As Congressman Nadler said he's ready to take it to the courts if need be. And so we could probably imagine that that's where it would play out. I'm not sure Attorney General Barr, after the back and forth we've already seen, I'm not sure he would just suddenly say, okay, fine, here's the full report, public, fully and unredacted. So I guess we'll have to kind of wait and see over these next few days, possibly weeks, but certainly, yeah, Congressman Nadler is ready to play hardball.
Let's move from this confrontation between House Democrats and the White House to a different confrontation between House Democrats and the White House. This one over security clearances. We had this testimony, a transcript released from a whistleblower about the way the White House handled these security clearances. What are we hearing here?
Right. So this is just another front in these investigations led by the, you know, new democratically controlled House. Here we've got a whistleblower who said, you know, that she and others had flagged 25 people saying, you know, they shouldn't be given these clearances. And yet she was overruled by her boss. And we've learned from the New York Times reporting that Trump himself had intervened, at least in the instance of his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, to get him a security clearance. So there's a lot of questions here about why there was this intervention, So, you know, a non-political public servant was sort of overruled in her assessment of whether someone deserved a security clearance. And, you know, she's come forward. She's doing interviews. She's kind of saying, you know, this, I came forward out of the public interest, out of public good. I believe this puts the country at risk to have people who, you know, there were some concerns in their background when we did these investigations into the security clearances that you know, they might be susceptible to foreign influence or a number of other things she named. So we'll see how that plays out. But that committee has also issued a subpoena to speak to the manager who is in charge of reversing those assessments.
And that's what House Democrats are doing. Have House Republicans responded to these allegations?
Yes. So they obviously think they've called this a political theater, and they believe that Democrats are being overly zealous in their pursuit of by issuing subpoenas, et cetera. There is some back and forth over who's being hypocritical here because Democrats say, well, what about, you know, the Benghazi investigation? What about the emails and investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails? You know, these were all highly political and highly politicized investigations. So there's some back and forth about, you know, obviously at the heart of this, it is political, and Democrats are very interested in pursuing these investigations into the White House and Donald Trump. But they believe that that's why they won in 2018. They believe that they were sent, they were given the majority to, you know, do their oversight role that they believe Republicans weren't doing prior to their victory in 2018. So, I expect to fully see more of this, more of these investigations, even though, you know, the Mueller report concluded. And the Mueller investigation is over.
Talking to Lauren Gambino from The Guardian, looking at some of the top stories in national politics this week. The first accusation against Vice President Biden in this series now that we're hearing about came from a former Nevada state lawmaker named Lucy Flores, saying the potential 2020 presidential candidate had made inappropriate physical contact with her. Here's some of what she had to say on CNN last Sunday.
Very unexpectedly and out of nowhere, I feel Joe Biden put his hands on my shoulders, get up very close to me from behind, lean in, smell my hair, and then plant a slow kiss on the top of my head.
Can you talk more, Lauren, about what Flores has said and now some other women have said about this kind of unwanted attention, physical contact from the former vice president?
Yes. So as we just heard, Flores and a few other women have come forward and talked about these sort of encounters with the former vice president that they said made them feel uncomfortable. They're acknowledging that his intent might not have been to make them feel uncomfortable, but ultimately that was the result, and they felt this behavior and this physical contact crossed a line. We're hearing reaction from across the political spectrum. Joe Biden maintains a lot of support, especially among former lawmakers of both sides of the aisle have come to his defense and said this is just the type of politician he is. He's a hugger. He's a kisser. He embraces people physically. That's just who he is. He would never, you know, ever in his wildest dreams intend to make someone uncomfortable. But you're also seeing, especially in this Me Too moment and movement, you're seeing a wider discussion about what is appropriate, you know, personal space, where and how men can touch women or other men. And so you're seeing, I think, and it's being led by, you know, younger women. It's some of the women who are coming forward are relatively younger. And it is, I think there is a generational divide in the reaction. But you saw Nancy Pelosi yesterday saying, you know, you do the arm's length distance when you meet someone you don't know. Just pretend both parties have a cold, and that's how you should approach these sort of interactions with voters or whoever you might be meeting for the first time. You're just seeing all sorts of reactions. I think it's a different conversation than we've been having, I think, with the Me Too moment. These aren't accusations of harassment or assault. These are women saying, he made me uncomfortable with the way he touched me. And that is different. And I think there's a lot of parties eager to have this conversation. As to what it means for his campaign, I guess we'll wait and see. His team seems certainly willing to push back and sort of try to clarify some of these encounters and some of these accusations.
We'll listen to Joe Biden's response in just a moment. I want to bring in a caller at 800-642-1234. Alicia is with us in Milwaukee. Alicia, hi.
Good afternoon. My thoughts were that I think Joe Biden is old news as he is representing in his behavior. I was never brought up to touch my colleagues in that manner. I think that that type of mindset that would be okay is very old-fashioned, and it dispossesses women of their bodies. I am not here for you to touch, hug, kiss, none of the above. I'm your colleague, and we're both here to do the same work. I say he's old news, and I also feel that we have a whole new slate of candidates that we could be looking forward to. Why is this constant need to go backwards? Why are we not looking to these younger candidates that have none of these issues and recognize the importance of not touching someone and kissing them and smelling their hair? That's ridiculous.
Alicia, thanks a lot for the call. Alicia's not alone. I think there are other Democrats, maybe of another generation, saying very similar things, Lauren.
Absolutely. I mean, you think about the breadth of this Democratic field. I mean, granted, Joe Biden's not in it yet, but I mean, one of the youngest members wasn't even born when he entered the Senate. I mean, this is the stretch of his career. And when you talk about him being old-fashioned, you know, some of these other candidates were just naturally raised in different eras. And so these sort of social mores that we're discussing right now are very second nature to them. This is how they were raised, and this is the environment they were raised in. So I think, you know, Joe Biden, especially given his long record, you know, if you take it, he's already being kind of asked and talking about the Anita Hill Supreme Court confirmation hearing. He's apologized for that. So I think taken as a whole, you know, there's this question of is he, you know, generationally outdated for this new young party?
Let's give a listen now. The vice president's team and he on his Twitter site put up a video responding to this. Here's a quick listen.
Social norms have begun to change. They've shifted. And the boundaries of protecting personal space have been reset. And I get it. I get it. I hear what they're saying. I understand it. And I'll be much more mindful. That's my responsibility. My responsibility, and I'll meet it.
So, no way to predict this, I guess. Is that going to be enough for people?
Exactly. I mean, he didn't explicitly apologize to any of these women in the video, and I wonder if that encourages other women to come forward. You know, as we've said before, a lot of his behavior happened in public. He did this, you know, very openly. This is, again, part of who he is. So I do wonder if some of these other women will start to say, you know, that's me in this photo with him, and actually I felt uncomfortable then, and, you know, I wish he would have just apologized or taken ownership of that. Nonetheless, he is, you know, sort of saying, like, I get it, and I see that it's changed, and I, too, will change my behavior, especially if I do run for president in 2020. So, you know, he is at least accepting, he's sort of casting it, as we were talking about earlier, as, you know, rules have changed, norms have changed, and I, too, will change with them.
Talking to Lauren Gambino from The Guardian about some of the top stories from the nation's capital this week. Now we'll turn to healthcare. I want to give a listen to President Trump speaking at the National Republican Congressional Committee dinner last night.
The Republican Party will be the champion of pre-existing conditions. You have to do it. Some of you like it, some of you don't, but you're going to have to like it, not only for politics, it's the right thing.
President Trump, there was a kind of a back and forth between him and Republicans on a focus soon on health care. What's been going on, Lauren?
Well, so right after the Mueller report, the conclusions came out, Donald Trump decided to seize the moment. He was really exuberant out of the conclusion that his team hadn't colluded with the Russians, and he decided to announce this new healthcare initiative. Well, Republicans, you know, in very recent memory, remember their efforts to repeal the Affordable Care Act being defeated multiple times. And they do not want to have that fight right before, you know, the big presidential election. They're just not ready to have that fight, especially with Nancy Pelosi controlling the House. What's the point? Was, you know, their thinking on this. So Donald Trump has, you know, over the last few days, he's been hearing from a lot of his Republican colleagues who are very confused on why he would turn to health care, the one issue where a lot of them believe they lost the majority in the House on this issue. Democrats really went out strong, you know, campaigned on health care. They made this about the health care election. They used it to draw contrast with their Republican opponents, and they won the House. So we've heard Mitch McConnell even spoke to the president and effectively told him, I'm not bringing this up in the Senate. So, you know, switch gears. So now we've seen Trump walk back from that. He, you know, he had declared the Republican Party would be the party of health care. Now he's sort of walking back and saying he's going to have this great plan, but you've got to wait till after the 2020 election. That's when he's going to bring it forward, and that's when they're going to have this big vote. So now he's kind of dangling it for, you know, reelect me and we'll have this great new health care plan. Though, to be fair, that is sort of what he said in 2016, and it didn't work after that when he was the president and they had full control, when Republicans had full control of Congress. So whether that, you know, works as a message, we will see. But as of right now, it looks like health care has definitely been punted, at least for now.
Bring out a caller on this. Eric is with us in Madison. Eric, hello.
Hi. Firstly, I guess if you believe anything that comes out of the White House, good luck to you, because there hasn't been a plan for anything from day one, whether it be health care reform or the border wall. It's all shoot from the hip. I mean, the guy doesn't recall where his father was born at. But number two, if there was a plan, you're not gonna do anything until you do something with campaign finance. They're all funding the politicians' political agenda, and it's just back and forth and switch politics.
Eric, I gotcha. Thanks a lot for calling in. Eric, referring to the president, referring to his father being born in Germany a few times lately. He was born in New York City. But Eric's point, is this something that Republicans in Congress are feeling, a sense that there isn't a plan, that the president is making this up as he goes?
Yes, and that was part of their reaction, that, you know, they were sort of blindsided by this. You know, healthcare is the one issue that really dogs them. They really tried hard in 2017, and they just could not pass a repeal. And, you know, eventually some of the plans were repeal and replace, but there were multiple efforts to do this, and they couldn't get it through. So, you know, Republicans in Congress do not have a consensus plan that they believe could even pass the Senate, which is controlled by Republicans, you know, not even getting into the House, which is controlled by Democrats. So yeah, they were a bit blindsided by this. You know, obviously the White House isn't the one generating a healthcare plan. Trump has actually been all over the map in terms of what he supports. You know, this idea of sort of telling them to embrace pre-existing conditions, which Republicans have come around to since the Affordable Care Act was passed under Obama. But, you know, that is one of the most popular pieces of the Affordable Care Act. And, you know, initially Republicans were against everything to do with the Affordable Care Act, and they came around to pre-existing conditions. Several of them defended it when they were being challenged in 2018. So that, you know, that is something Republicans are coming around on. And a lot of the plans you could imagine would try to protect pre-existing conditions. But as a whole, you know, as a big, broad, sweeping plan, it's not there. And his point is correct. There isn't a White House plan. There isn't a Republican congressional plan. And so that was part of the confusion and just the reason that Republicans were so confounded.
Talking to Lauren Gambino. Thanks for that call. She's from The Guardian. We're looking at some of the top stories in national politics. We invited you earlier to call about some of these accusations and concerns about former Vice President Joe Biden. I want to bring in another caller or two on that. Karen is with us in Milwaukee. Karen, hi.
Hi.
What do you think?
Well, I feel kind of differently than a lot of people, I guess. I was honored this fall to meet Joe Biden at a rally in Milwaukee, and I had the opportunity to talk with him, and I shared with him that I appreciated some of his comments on some of the issues. He took me by the hand, and he kissed me on the cheek. I was not in any way uncomfortable. I thought it was a warm gesture. I felt like my comments were appreciated. I'm close to his age. I'm 68.
I'm going to jump in, Karen. Thank you for sharing that story. We're just about out of time. Lauren, we're going to be watching this. It's early in the primary process, not even the primary process. Biden isn't even in the campaign. 30 seconds. What are you watching for on this story?
I'm watching to see if more women come forward. I'm watching to see what his team does next. They've tried several times to respond to it, and today they did do this video. And you've kind of started to hear rumblings, you know, what if he doesn't run? And that's such a death sentence for these for people in his position debating whether to come. So I'm kind of seeing whether, you know, how he grapples with that and how strongly he defends himself and in the face of what might be more accusations.
Thanks, Lauren, for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's Lauren Gambino, The Guardian's political correspondent. She joined us for our weekly look at the latest stories in national politics.